Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Some people listen. Not all of them are in my family, though. I'm working on that. It's 11:34. We've got pretty blue skies downtown Chicago. I see bright shadows being cast and streaks of sunlight on the buildings downtown. The city looks kind of pretty right now, although the snow is all gone. I thought there's no way we're not going to have a white Christmas, and we got those two rounds of snow the first two weekends of the month, and I thought, man, this it's cold. That snow's not going to all melt. And now all we have is really the signature of a Chicago winter, which is the triangular-shaped, crusty, gray, garbagey snow piles that line the sidewalk and curb all around the city. You know those things that you have to climb into when you get out of your car? The city does a terrible job of plowing streets, and they don't shovel the sidewalks. So winter in Chicago when it snows is gross and difficult, and we can do better. And when I become king, we're going to shovel the sidewalks, and we're going to plow the city streets. You're going to move your car to the odd side one day and the even side the next day, and we're going to sweep them up. I've still got leaves on my street, and it's not a major thoroughfare, but it's not Mayberry RFD out there. We're right in the city in one of the big neighborhoods, but they just don't do it. And the aldermen don't seem to have to own that. Like, you would think that'd be something that the residents in those neighborhoods would really get on their case saying, whatever the city's policy is, how about you spend some of your money and you organize something and get it done? I know you're listening to all this, Eric, but do you agree with me on that?
I certainly agree. Yeah, yes, I certainly agree that neighbors should get out and shovel the walks of people who are, for one reason or another, unable to do it. I mean, if there are people with disabilities or can't shovel their walks. I don't think that it's realistic to create an entire fleet of sidewalk cleaners in the city of Chicago, especially given this budget situation that we have. It would cost a lot of money. Think how many miles of sidewalks there have got to be. It's close to double the number of amount of miles of streets that we have, right? Because every street has a sidewalk on either side. And to get people out, to get the equipment to the neighborhoods, and to have that equipment ready year round, and to have a staff of people, I don't know how many people you'd have to plow sidewalks in a quick fashion. This is the kind of thing that citizens, I mean, I know this maybe sounds like a socialist utopia idea, but citizens ought to get out and shovel off their own dang sidewalks, not just their front sidewalk, not just their front steps, but their, you know, all the way across in front of their houses, and help neighbors. And maybe the city could do something like, you know, buy two snow blowers for each city block.
See?
And give them to, or
see?
Something like that.
There are 4,000. Neil Fisher, our producer today, tells me that the city has more than 4,000 miles of city streets. That would be 8,000 miles of sidewalks. But now, not all of them need to be shoveled. Not all of them are residential. So whatever. I mean, it's gargantuan. But I also think we're a big city and we can get things done. I'm impressed, if nothing else, Eric, by what a priority it is not. It's not even a conversation. And
it has been a conversation. They did have some pilot programs in some of the wards.
Last year.
Yeah.
But what happened to that? I mean, really, why doesn't my alderman, and you know, why don't I get off my boom JJ and tell him about this or do something myself? But I mean, they could offer awards for cleanest street, and they could say on Thursday from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. or Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. we're cleaning this street and that street. We'll see you out there. And the city and the alderman's campaign truck pulls up with hot cocoa. I don't know. I'll stop.
I mean, no. I think there's something to your idea. I think maybe a better way to do this would be to discover who, you know, in able-bodied households, if they don't have their sidewalks cleared by a certain time, that there'd be a fine, there'd be an escalating series of fines kicking in. That might be a way to raise some money rather than spend money to solve this problem. Maybe you could raise some money based on this problem. But again, it's one of those things where neighborhoods have to just get together. Neighbors have to get together and help neighbors clear off the snow.
Yeah.
To ask the city to do it, I mean, it'd be, it's so expensive. And you imagine the number of municipal employees and the size of their pensions and the cost of keeping the equipment running and keeping the equipment stored.
The people that are writing the tickets for when we park more than 12 inches from the curb, and I've got that ticket before. Can we give those guys and gals some shovels? Okay, never mind. But the owners of the buildings, like, I don't know if you know where I live, but it's a three-story tall condo building with a whole bunch all halfway down the block. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know where you live.
So then the landlord of that, the guy that owns that or the company that owns that, they don't spend a nickel shoveling our sidewalk. And I guess I could do it too, but they own the building. Right. So if they said...
That's on them.
If after 2 inches of snow, that is not cleared within 24 hours, you are fined $100 a day, or pick a number that will motivate them. That could get done, and that would benefit the whole neighborhood because hundreds of people walk up and down that sidewalk that don't even live there.
Well, of course, and it is incumbent on landlords to keep those sidewalks clean. That's not on you as a resident of that building. That is the landlord's responsibility, and that landlord needs to contract with a company to get out and do that, or get out and do it herself or himself. Or get fined. I mean, I agree with you totally on that.
Eric Zorn's on a line, and you may recognize the voice in this segment. He's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, the weekly newsletter. He's also the longtime columnist in the Chicago Tribune, now a weekly contributor to our Mincing Rascals podcast. We're going to drop the pod today, Tuesday, rather than our normal recording. Wait, what is today? Is today Wednesday or Tuesday?
No, today is Tuesday, and we're going to have Steve Bertrand joining us for the first time in many years.
Yeah, he sent me a note this morning, and I detected a sense of worry in his email because he said, "So what are we talking about?" And I says, "Well, we've got a Google Docs shared document, and I'll copy and paste that to you." But I think Steve's worried that he's been out of the loop long enough now that he won't be able to comment intelligently on the city budget or whatever the heck else we're going to talk about.
No. We both know Steve Bertrand is brilliant, and I'm sure he will catch up extremely quickly. So.
Well, and I also feel that if you listen closely enough to the podcast, not all of us are completely versed on the topics we're talking about anyway.
No.
So I told Steve,
no,
don't worry about it. By the way, somebody just sent me a text and said, our sidewalks were shoveled. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that because not everybody is doing that at my condo building. Speaking of the city, so I guess the mayor has a budget coming. The city council has passed something. Did you catch that, Eric?
Oh, sure, yeah. The city council passed the budget on Saturday, and then the mayor was dithering a little bit, and this morning he came out and said that he would sign it, sign the budget proposed by the alders, and... He's sort of begrudging. No, I guess he said, no, I'm sorry. He didn't say he would sign it. He said he wouldn't sign it, but that he would not veto it, which is, I guess, kind of a sulky way of letting the budget go through.
If they get enough votes, yeah.
Oh, no, they have enough. They've already passed it.
But doesn't it require his signature?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think that you can just let it.
Oh, I think that's right. If it goes long enough without your signature, then it de facto becomes law. It becomes
right.
It passes. At least some bodies of government are like that. So he can sit there and cross his arms and hold his breath, and then it'll happen regardless, right?
Evidently, I mean, I'm familiar with the expression pocket veto, where executive doesn't sign a piece of legislation and it is in effect vetoed. But this is, I guess, a pocket signature. I'm not sure how that works.
We'll have to work on that between now and 2:30 this afternoon when we record the pod.
I predicted that he was going to sign it and declare victory, which is not exactly what he did. But anyway, yeah.
So then all of our budget problems are solved here? All of this nonsense? Like, I just heard the headline a little while ago. I don't know what's in it or not. Is the bag tax in there? Is the gambling thing in there? Is the liquor upgrade tax going to be there? All that stuff?
Apparently, yeah, all that stuff. I'm really not happy about some of these things, and I wrote about that in this morning's.
Yeah, I noticed.
I just, you know, that first of all, I think that, I mean, I've been a pretty strong critic of the mayor and the way he's handled this budget negotiation, but when his budget team comes back and points out that this proposal that did pass from the opposition alderman is $163 million short, because it doesn't really make up for what needs to be made up for. I think I have to agree with him. It looks to me like a pretty, like very rosy, very optimistic, you know, oh, we're going to have these efficiencies and we're going to raise all this money on ads on light poles and ads on bridge houses. And they think they're going to generate $6 million from advertisers who want to superimpose their messages on city landmarks when people are playing Pokemon Go. $6 million they think they're going to get out of that. They're going to sell debt. When you have outstanding debts, companies will often sell their debt to debt collectors for pennies on the dollar. The city, the sometimes reported, the city is owed $8.2 billion in uncollected debt. Now, these debts are largely uncollectible, so they would sell them. They're hoping to sell the entire debt package, however much they think they can collect, for about $90 million. And Mayor Johnson has objected to that because it's basically six debt collectors on people who haven't been able to pay their ambulance fees or their utility bills, their red light camera tickets. And Mayor Johnson points out that this is going to result in people being hassled. A lot of people, low-income people, who have, for one reason or another, haven't paid their bills, they're going to be hassled by debt collectors, and that's not a pretty situation to be in. The video gambling thing is, it looks like there's going to be a vast expansion of video gambling with these video poker and slot machine terminals at bars and restaurants and presumably at the airports. And again, I don't have any moral objection to gambling, but it's just kind of kitschy to sleazy, and it drives people into bankruptcy. And it's money that could be going toward restaurants or theaters or retail establishments. This money is being just thrown away. Gambling is a whole issue that I'm not all that comfortable with. I think it's kind of out of hand, and this is another example of that. I've been in airports, like out in Reno and Vegas, where it just feels like you're in a cheap hotel with all the terminals there. So that's something I'm not happy about. The bag tax, shopping bag tax in Chicago is going to go up to 15 cents, and that's one among the highest in the country. There's some California cities that do 20, and this was sold to us as a way to keep litter off the streets. It is environmentally friendly. And now it's just clearly a cash grab that actually plastic bags are a fraction of a percent of the litter problem in this country. And environmentally speaking, you can make a case for canvas tote bags. The studies I've found said that it takes 131 uses of a canvas tote bag to make up for the environmental impact of one of these flimsy plastic bags. So it's not it's not like this great idea. It's just a way to raise money. And I think it's going to end up hitting lower income people more than upper income people. Upper income people that's what the studies have
shown. You wonder too, I wonder how truthful people will be, because a lot of those bag taxes are self-imposed when you check yourself out. And then you indicate how many plastic bags you're taking. I wonder what percentage of the people are being honest about it. And if you know that every time, if you do five bags, you're close to a dollar now. If you do seven bags, you're at a dollar. And prices are what they are. I wonder if people are either going to lie or they're going to bring their own tote bags and they're not going to pay the 15 cents. And the revenue they're expecting either way, because people are lying or not using the plastic bags, won't be realized. Maybe that's good for the environment. I heard what you just said, but I wonder if at some point you're cutting off your nose. I want to talk to you, Eric, also about the CBS CECOT story from 60 Minutes. And maybe did you see the Paul Sullivan piece in the Tribune today about the Cubs third baseman Matt Shaw? We'll pick it up here in a minute. We're talking to Eric Zorn. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. My friend Eric Zorn's on the line, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter you get for free if you just email ericzorn@gmail.com. He's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. We're going to record it today and talk about various things. What was your did you watch then, Eric, the 60 Minutes CECOT story? Because I know it's streamed in Canada. CBS said that it wasn't ready to be published yet, broadcast, so they pulled it at the last minute from Sunday night's show, and that has led to suspicion of Barry Weiss and what's going on over there anyway. But I understand that it did drop in Canada. Have you seen it?
I did see it, yes. I have, in fact, at the Picayune Sentinel this morning, I have a link to a Substack post where the guy has found a broadcast quality version of the story, and I watched it. And it's good. It's powerful. It's very 60 Minutes-like. They go through and they talk about what's going on in that prison in El Salvador, where they've taken Venezuelan people who are in the United States, who are here without documentation or without authorization, and they ship them down there and put them into the harshest possible prison. And they show a lot of the prison conditions down there. They ask for a comment from Homeland Security, from the White House, from various government sources, and the government shut them down, didn't want to talk to them. So Barry Weiss, who is the new
executive editor at 60 Minutes,
executive editor at CBS News, she had signed off on this. And then for some reason on Sunday, she decided that it wasn't good enough because there wasn't a response from the administration. So they pulled the segment at the absolute last minute. They had been promoting it, and it had already been shipped off to the Canadian broadcasters who were going to air it, who did air it. And she pulled it, and her justification was so flimsy and so frightening in some ways, because what she was essentially doing was allowing the White House, allowing the Trump administration to kill the story by not offering a comment.
I wonder if there's some other reporting. She said that the reporting just isn't done yet, and that we will broadcast it without prejudice when it's ready. It's not soup yet. And I wonder if the only thing that is missing is a response from the White House, since this is critical of the way the administration is doing it. And if that is the case, Eric, do you think it's fair to wait until they cobble together a response, or is a no response a sufficient response?
Well, these segments are weeks in the making, and the White House and Homeland Security had plenty of opportunity to respond. They didn't. And this is a common thing that happened, and it happened to me a lot as a journalist, where you would call somebody for a comment, and they would think that if they don't comment, then maybe they can kill the story, because the story won't have both sides. So if you can't get my side, then your editor will kill the story. That never, ever happens, except it did here. Because it's like you have an obligation as a journalist to reach out in a timely fashion to people who you're writing about who may be embarrassed or may not like the story. Yeah. You have an obligation to do that. But if they say no comment, that's part of the story. That is included in the story, but it doesn't kill the story. And to allow for Barry Weiss to say, like, well, the White House didn't respond to us, so that we're going to kill the story. Presumably, if the White House continues not to respond, Barry Weiss will never run the story. I can't imagine she will. She will think of an excuse to run it once they've done that. And the people at CBS are in an uproar about this, because it looks like Barry Weiss, who is a sort of a conservative voice.
She's not a journalist. She does not have a background in journalism, but there she is calling the shots on something like this.
No, and very self-righteous about the story isn't ready yet. She's saying, like, this isn't advancing the story. There are a lot of people who get a lot of their news from 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes does these responsible 13-minute long reports. I had never seen footage from inside that prison, the kind that they showed. I had not seen the interviews. And the question always remains to me, like, okay, let's say that these people are suspected gang members. We don't take suspects and put them into the harshest prisons in the world in other countries because we suspect them of something. In our country, you have to be convicted of a crime to be in prison, or at least charged with a serious crime on evidence. And they had no evidence in these cases. They just were taking these migrants and putting them into these horrible conditions. And it is just so profoundly un-American.
I wonder what will happen to Sharon Alfonsi, the reporter who did the story and has come out flat out just criticizing Barry Weiss and I guess CBS in general. But she's been very specific and critical and harsh about it, sort of, putting her head on the chopping block now, if that's the way these things go. But I thought it was interesting that the reporter herself called out Barry Weiss on this.
Yes. No, I think that they're certainly smart enough not to fire her at this point, I would hope. I mean, this reminds me of what's called the Streisand effect. You're familiar with that?
If you look Barbara at her, Streisand. Well, go ahead.
No, well, Barbara Streisand was really upset that there was going to be a photo of her house shown on some small social media site.
Yeah,
so she filed a lawsuit. And so everybody on the internet kind of conspired to make sure that everybody saw this photo of Barbara Streisand's house that nobody would have seen otherwise. And I think in this case, you know, you would have had, you're going to have so many more eyeballs on this story, so much more attention to this, this really weird behavior by the federal government.
Yeah.
Because of this, of what Barry Weiss did. I mean, she's just total, it's going to totally backfire. It already has. That video is out there. It's in a number of sites. And again, I've got it at the Picayune Sentinel. If you go there, you can find a link to that video and watch it. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Eric Zorn publishes the Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. He'll sign you up for free, pay a pittance, and he'll give you the premium edition. I will talk to you a little later on this afternoon. We've got this and other topics to discuss on the Mincing Rascals podcast, the podcast for people who care about Chicago. I've been saying all morning I want to talk about the Matt Shaw story that Paul Sullivan wrote about in the Tribune. I'll have to wait either until later in the show or certainly on the podcast. Eric, I'll talk to you soon.
Good, John. Thanks.